So I hear the rules have changed since I arrived. I apologize. I had to get my sons off to a trip to Alaska on a fishing trip. I chose today's reading on in anticipation of Juneteenth. Excuse me. Who here knows what the date commemorates? Just curious. Who knows that? Okay. Juneteenth. It was a day in history, 1865, when General Grant arrived 1.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation of President Lincoln to inform Texas, the state of Texas, that they no longer could hold prisoner on hostage emancipated slaves, and they were all to be released. So in recognition of Juneteenth, I wanted to choose a piece that I particularly like from an author I'm enthralled with, which is Charles Chestnut. Charles Chestnut was born just after the war, Civil War, and wrote about life after the war in the South particularly. He was the grandson of a white slave owner, but he was considered himself African-American and black. And he wrote about in a more complex way about the social issues of race and society in the post-war era. So I thought this would be appropriate. I chose a section from a book called The Conjurer's Wife, and I'm probably not going to be able to finish it given that I thought I had 7 minutes, but now we have five. So I'll just get started. Sunday was sometimes a rather dull day at our place. In the morning, and by the way, this is a difficult passage to read. When the weather was pleasant, my wife and I would drive to town, a distance of about 5 miles, to attend the church of our choice. The afternoons we spent at home were, for the most part, occupying ourselves with the newspapers and magazines and the contents of our fairly good library. We had a piano in the house on which my wife played with skill and feeling. I possessed a passable baritone voice and could accompany myself indifferently well when my wife was not to assist me. When the resources failed us, we were apt to find it a little dull. One Sunday afternoon in the early spring, the balmy spring of North Carolina, when the air is in that ideal balance between heat and cold, when one wishes it could always remain, my wife and I were seated on the front piazza. She warily but consciously plowing through a missionary report while I followed the impossible career of the blonde heroine of a rudimentary novel. I had thrown the book aside in disgust when I saw Julius, my uncle, coming through the yard under the spreading elms, which was already in full leaf. He wore his Sunday clothes and advanced with a dignity of movement quite different from his weekday slouch. "Have a seat, Julius," I said, pointing to an empty rocking chair. "No, thank you, boss. I'll just sit here on the top step." "Oh, no, Uncle Julius," exclaimed Annie. "Take this chair. You'll find it much more comfortable." The old man grinned in appreciation of her solitude and seated himself somewhat awkwardly. "Julius," I remarked, "I'm thinking of setting out a super dog vines on the sand hill where the three persimmon trees are, and while I'm working there, I think I'll plant watermelons between the vines and get a little something to pay for first year's work. The new railroad will be finished by the middle of the summer, and I can ship the melons north and get a good price for them." If you ever get to have any more plowing to do," replied Julius, "I expect you'll have to buy a mudder creature, because it's as much as them horses can do to tend to the work they got now." "Yes, I had thought of that. I think I'll get a mule. A mule can do more work and doesn't require as much attention as a horse." "I wouldn't advise you to buy no mule," remarked Julius with a shake of his head. "Why not?" Well, you may low hit all the foolishness, but if I was you in your place, I wouldn't buy no mule." "But this is a reason. What objection have you to a mule?" "Fact is," continued the old man in a serious tone, I don't like to drive a mule. I've always feared I might be imposing on some human creature. Every time I cut a mule with a hickory, appears to me most likely I cutting some of my own relations or somebody else. What can't help this. But what's such an absurd idea into your head?" I asked. My question was followed by a short silence during which Julius seemed engaged in a mental struggle. And I'm almost finished. I tell you this, he said at length. He said it like, ah, Don Harley, spec for you to believe this. Does you remember that club-footed man was hilt at the horse for you the other day when you was getting out of the Rockaway down to Ma's Archie McMillan stall? Well, yes, I believe I do remember seeing a club-footed man there. Did you ever see a club-footed Negro before since? No, I can't remember that I ever saw a club-footed colored man, I replied after a moment's reflection. You and Miss Annie wouldn't have wanted to believe me if I was to tell you that that man was once a mule. No, I replied, I don't think it's very likely you could make us believe that. Why, Uncle Julius, said Annie severely, what ridiculous nonsense. This reception of the old man's statement reduced him to silence, and it required some diplomacy on my part to induce him to vouchsafe an explanation. The prospect of a long, dull afternoon was not alluring, and I was glad to have the monotony of Sabbath quietly relieved by a plantation legend. Charles Chestnut, The Conjurer's Wife. Thank you.